This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
By the book on BFM 89.9.
Once upon a time, there were 25 tin soldiers painted with bright uniforms of red and blue. They were all brothers, cast from the same old tin spoon. Each soldier looked exactly alike, except for one. He was the last to be made, and the tin had run out, leaving him with only one leg. But he stood just as steadfast as his brothers. The soldiers belong to us.
Hello and welcome to Buy the Book. I'm Sharmila Ganesan, and as always, with me, my fellow fairy tale creature, Leech Whelan.
Hello.
It is our monthly bibliography episode where we focus on one particular author and their body of work. And this month, we thought it would be a great time to talk about one of the greats in many ways, but also someone who doesn't often get brought into conversations about great literature, I think. And perhaps for reasons that we'll understand, Hans Christian Andersen, who, of course, is famously known as one of the, patron saints of fairy tales, is often thrown about. And April 2nd is actually his birthday. So we thought, what better time than now to talk about him?
So where do we start, right? I think it's let's start with the basics, because otherwise we're going to get lost in a thicket, much as the beginning of most fairy tales would suggest. But so he was born 2nd April 1805, so that's more than 200 years ago now, and he was born in Denmark. Mm-hmm. He grew up in a family that had vague hints or a vague relationship. His father always said to nobility, although that has kind of gone back and forth over time. But suffice to say, he did not grow up rich. And I think that that's something that we should mention at the outset, because it's going to make its way into his writing and his stories later on. But he did not grow up rich. And he went to a boarding school as part of his education, during which he had a very difficult time. And that sort of exacerbated his own perceived status as an outsider. Again, a perspective that would continue to make its way into his writing.
So he was born in Odense in Denmark. And when you say he didn't grow up rich, I think it's worth mentioning his dad was a shoemaker, his mother was a washerwoman, and his mother couldn't read. One of the earliest stories that I managed to find about his introduction to stories was actually his father reading him the Arabian Nights. And his father was someone who only who didn't complete his education. He only studied up to, at that point, what would be elementary school. So I liked this attempt to introduce his son to something more than what they had. I thought that was a very poignant bit of history. The other thing was that there are these stories of how he spent a lot of his childhood speaking to local women, particularly women at a local asylum. And so apparently that's where he first got that love of folklore and stories, because he would basically be hearing these various stories that these women would tell him. And this carried on to a lot of his childhood, because, again, as you mentioned, he didn't circulate among the high upper class people in Denmark. He was very much brought up among the peasant class, one would say.
He's best known now for fairy tales, right? These are the fairy tales that continue to be published, republished, reissued, translated into so many languages. And we're going to get into them and some of our favorites later on. But in his lifetime, he also wrote a number of other things. And this is a theme, I think, that we're seeing with a lot of writers of a certain ilk. We covered this as well when we spoke about George Orwell. You know, just they're best known now for something, but in their lifetimes, there's a whole slew of other stuff. So he also wrote travelogues. He wrote an autobiography. He tried his hand at theatre for a time, but that didn't quite stick. And ultimately, it was his fairy tales that made his name. And I think that I wanted to bring that up in no small part because he actually struggled for a bit with being a writer of fairy tales, in that it was something that I think perhaps it, because it wasn't perceived as serious or literary or grand, you know. So it was something that he thought, no, I should persevere, you know, become a playwright, a novelist. And it was after some time, I think, sitting with it and talking to friends, that he began to think about fairy tales as what is it? The ultimate poetry, I think the phrase is. Mm. This idea that it is a universal poetry and something that can transcend boundaries. And I love that realization, partly because I've loved fairy tales for my entire life. And it is exactly this idea of it transcending cultures and transcending languages that is so appealing. And so to know that one of the most famous writers of fairy tales struggled with this and came out the other end, and thank goodness he did, is great.
And what I love about reading Anderson's life story is actually that you see why his fairy tales are so rich. They're not just stories that are fun or even interesting, but sort of forgettable. They really do draw on what I think are his real life experiences, because his experience coming into being a writer comes from his father died when he was very young. He was sent to a school for underprivileged children. Basically, he had to support himself as many things. He was an apprentice to a weaver. He worked as a tailor. And then he joined a theater troupe. And ultimately, it was the patronage of the owner of that theater company that allowed him to study more and sort of become who he was. And I think you can see the threads of those in his story when he talks about children who come from difficult backgrounds, when he talks about people who are tradesmen, who, you know, encounter difficulties or gifts and so on. And I think that the reason he's able to write about those things and to bring that element of social class and struggle into something that you wouldn't think of, you know, something like a fairy tale, which you wouldn't necessarily associate with making class commentary, I think it comes from that lived experience.
So the thing about fairy tales, right, is that they span a wide range of, or they come from a wide range of places. So you mentioned folklore earlier, and if we think about something like, for example, the Brothers Grimm, that was generally an attempt at collecting in written form an oral history, which is why, you know, they're not always the most enchanting of tales. Often they take place in cottages, people are eating rye bread. It's not exactly, you know, the stuff of dreams. But I think that Hans Christian Andersen is different in that a fair amount of his works are actually purely original. So some of them have their roots in folklore. Some of them come and you can trace it through to identifiable sources. Thumbelina, for example, is based on this idea of, you know, small people and the lands in which they live. Little Mermaid as well, while the storyline is original, the creatures come from a larger history or larger legacy of folklore. But his stories were wholly his own. And I think that part of why that appeals to children, part of why that appeals to adults, is because they are products of imagination and you can recognize that. And to go back to what you were saying about the lived experience and the travel, I wanted to talk about the travel for a bit, because I think it is partly through the fact that he traveled and wrote travelogues that were hugely popular in his lifetime. I think that's where that descriptive quality of the language was also coming from. And why perhaps, despite the fact that some of the fairy tales, some of the stories reference very specific Danish hallmarks, they don't all do that. And that is crucial because we don't always, I don't think we can always tie it back to specific moments in Danish history.
I think it's interesting that you bring that up, because we all tend to think of fairy tales as being sort of not really authored by anyone in particular, right? And a lot of them have these, they've evolved, they have roots in, they have roots that go so far back that nobody knows where they originated. They tend to be an amalgamation of things. So it is worth saying that Hans Christian Andersen, he actually wrote original stuff. A lot of these stories were his ideas. And it's interesting to me also that while he achieved a lot of fame in his lifetime, the people of his own country, Denmark, actually took quite a while to warm up to him. He In fact, it was almost a reverse fame. He became famous in the rest of Europe and the rest of the world before the people of Denmark decided that his stories were worth paying attention to. In fact, before that, I think a lot of their criticism of his work came from perhaps very similar things that we'd hear about the Grimm brothers, which is that they're not actually appropriate for children, that they're too dour, that they don't have morals, which is both sad and perhaps not entirely surprising.
Mm. I so badly want to talk about the style and the writing of the fairy tales, but I think we can do that in the second half. I did want to say, though, we have come to the part of the show where we're talking about rejection. And, you know, so while there was the public rejection that happened of his work and his personage, there are also so many stories from Hans Christian Andersen's personal life. And, you know, we last spoke about Emily Dickinson in this segment and about how closely guarded her personal life was, how much of her work was burned fundamentally or just gotten rid of. Hans Christian Andersen is the opposite. So his letters, his diaries, his correspondence, everything is still available to us. There is a lot that we know. And therefore, we also know that he had a lot of unrequited love affairs, for example, with people of both genders. We know that he had a friendship with Charles Dickens, whom he so deeply admired, and they ended up falling out over him extending what was supposed to be a short stay at Dickens' house to 5 weeks and getting chased out and, you know,
well, I can
remembering
imagine.
The trip.
Yeah, I can imagine real friendships ending that way too. Like, dude, you got to leave. You've been here too long. But
right.
But on this level, it's laughably sad.
And he remembers the trip with great fondness.
I know.
And, you know, by all accounts, never really understood what happened. And so to go back to what we were saying right at the start about him being an outsider, I think that extended to his social interactions and, again, made their way into stories.
Yeah, and he never married. By all accounts, he never actually managed relationships with the women that, with the people that he had feelings for, and often talked about himself as somehow not ever actually being able to do it. So I think you can see that in his stories. There's so many stories of unrequited love, so many stories of lovers being separated and never reunited. So, yeah, Hans Christian Andersen is an interesting study as a writer, because I think once you know where he comes from, you can't help but see where his stories come from. We are talking about, of course, the writer of fairy tales, Hans Christian Andersen. It's his birthday this month. And so we thought we'd dedicate our monthly bibliography episode to him. Let us know, are you a fan of fairy tales? Which ones are your favorites? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, or write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It was all started by a wicked imp. He was one of the wickedest of them all, the very devil himself. One day he was in a thoroughly good humour, having made a looking glass which had the magic power of making anything good and beautiful that looked into it shrink to next to nothing, while what was no good or was ugly stood out even worse. The loveliest landscapes would look just like boiled spinach, and the nicest people would become nasty. Their faces would be so twisted that one didn't know them again. This was great fun, thought the imp, and he would run about with a looking glass, and in the end there wasn't a country or a person anywhere that hadn't been distorted in it. Next thought.
Welcome back to Buy the Book with Sharmila and Lynn. It is our monthly bibliography episode, and this month we're dedicating it to Hans Christian Andersen, who, of course, is known for his fairy tales like Thumbelina, Little Mermaid, Tom Thumb, Princess and the Pea, and so, so many more. That's because, April 2nd is his birthday, so we thought, why not? When else a better time to talk about him? We've set up his life and where he comes from. I thought we should start this side of things first by maybe talking about a couple of our favorites. I was wondering whether you have a sort of Andersen favorite.
No, I mean, I don't, in the sense that there are several that I love, and to pick one single favorite seems very intense. I love Snow Queen. for example. I think that I do like his longer pieces, so I will say that. Some of the shorter ones I sometimes find a little unsatisfying, especially now that I'm no longer a child. Even, for example, The Ugly Duckling, which I enjoyed as a kid. So I think that there are some stories that were great when I was a child and I loved them so deeply, I felt them so deeply. But as an adult, they don't have the same resonance. And so something like Ugly Duckling falls into that category. Something like Thumbelina falls into that category. But others, like The Tinderbox, I continue to love to this day. The Steadfast Tin Soldier, I love to this day. So it's a mixed bag. You asked a really hard question.
I threw it to you first, which is a little unfair because I don't think I can pick one either. I was going to say my favorite is his entire huge anthology that I have. I will say, though, that I think if I were to be forced to pick one, Snow Queen for sure. I love Snow Queen. But I think I like Little Mermaid just for that perversely subversive reason of feeling like I know the real Little Mermaid story. And it's not the one that everyone thinks they know, because the actual story is so sad and so it's so tragic. And the way it's written is tragic as well. There's just a pervasive melancholy to that story that feels... Even as a child, I remember being so troubled by it. Not even sad, but troubled. And I continue to feel that today. And I think it's a great example of how he's not just a teller of stories. He's genuinely a good writer.
She's beautiful, but she's weird. and I think that's not such a profound thing to say, but in the context of Little Mermaid and the Disneyfication of it that we've seen over time, I reread it in preparation for our show. And what struck me, aside from the pervasive, like you said, melancholy and sadness inherent in the story, is the fact that the Little Mermaid is a strange creature. She is unlike her family. She's unlike anybody that she knows. Mm-hmm. And when she goes up, when she ascends above the waves, she's also unlike anybody. She is a constant outsider. And it's fascinating because it used to be that in these stories, sometimes beauty is enough. Sometimes beauty is the thing that wins you everything, that is the replacement of a personality. But in this case, that's just really not what you get out of Little Mermaid.
I remember, and I know I don't mean to go on about Little Mermaid so much, but I think it's a great example of just the kinds of things you get in his stories. I remember the thing that stayed with me as a child was the fact that in exchange for getting her feet, that every step she takes would feel like knives were stabbing into them. And I remember thinking, even then, what a sort of painful decision that was for her to achieve this thing, and yet only to feel like she doesn't belong there as well. And these are themes. And she dances, yeah. So again, I think that's why if I were to choose between the Grimm brothers and Andersen stories, I feel like I usually gravitate towards Hans Christian Andersen, mostly because of these sorts of novelistic features in his stories that aren't necessarily present in the Grimm's ones, which feel a lot more sort of folklorish.
So they're written, I think is the important thing. They're written by a writer, not written by people who were functioning in some way as archivists. And there is a very big difference to that. You mentioned earlier that some of the pushback towards Hans Christian Andersen and the fairy tales were that they were dour and dull. And I don't think that that is the case. But the other two things that I wanted to address were language as well as an occasional lack of moral. So if you read The Tinderbox again, which I remember reading as a child and, feeling quite fond about it, it starts with him lopping off a witch's head, he's your hero in the story. This attack is more or less unprovoked. She just wouldn't give him something he wanted. And yet, he triumphs, you know. By the end of the story, he is rewarded. The same thing is true in Little Klaus and Big Klaus. Those are two reprehensible characters. And you do definitely get the sense that there is no real moral here. This is just a funny story. they're also written in a very spoken manner. So that was something that was often talked about, the fact that he flouted literary convention to write in a non-literary and more conversational sense. Again, all reasons why these stories have continued to survive, because they don't preach at children, and they don't preach at children in literary highfalutin language.
And they were specifically meant for children. I don't think, unlike, again, the Grimm's fairy tales, which are a collection of folk stories which have evolved, not necessarily all meant for children. Hans Christian Andersen was very aware that he's writing for children. And I think that was part of the reason why the reception wasn't as enthusiastic, because there were these certain ideas of what was appropriate for children. But that said, you know, there are then these stories like The Emperor's New Clothes or The Ugly Duckling, which you mentioned earlier, which are very much in that vein of morality tales. I mean, they're fun. They're great fun. But they do teach you a lesson. And as a kid, I remember having Ladybird versions of those books, and they made so much sense to me, so much so that these days, The Ugly Duckling or even Emperor's New Clothes are a particular, not a trope, what's the word for it? It means a particular thing. It's passed on to become more than just the original story. And I think there's a power to those kinds of tales as well.
Can I talk a little bit about sadness? Because just to return to that idea of the sadness that was pervasive in Hans Christian Andersen's life as well as his work, I just also wanted to say that when we say that he had a sad life, this is not a judgment call. This is something that academics, that historians have noted about his life. If you look it up, it's a word that often goes hand in hand in association with his name, sadly. But I think that the freedom to feel in the stories is so important. And the fact that the moralizing, right, doesn't always come with a reward. For example, you could be a steadfast tin soldier. It doesn't mean that you're not headed into the fire.
Mm-hmm.
You could be a little mermaid who is just curious and who wants to see the world. And it doesn't mean that you won't just end up as foam in the sea. And, you know, there are all these things. And I think that while that lack of moralizing might be quite scary for people who I don't know, who perhaps want a more rigid worldview, I think that this openness and freedom is part of what allows children to ask questions about stories and to gain other things from the stories beyond, oh, I see it's a moral.
So Kierkegaard actually describes Andersen's, both him and his writing, as being elegiac or as a lament. Mm. And when I read that quote by him, it feels so appropriate, because that's exactly what I feel when I read so many of his stories. It doesn't leave you feeling hopeless, but it definitely leaves you feeling the sad, difficult things in life that you often are told you don't have to feel, but in reality you do. And I think that's a big thing to help children go through. And that's why I think that his fairy tales are actually very important, because they help you feel those big feelings that may not always be comfortable, but you do need to learn to sit with them.
And it's also why you can revisit.
Yes.
You know, it's also why so many years on, you can revisit and find something fresh, find something new. It's worth, I think, bringing up something that he said ahead of his funeral, and that was to do with the music that he wanted played.
Yeah, so just before his death, he spoke to a composer about the sort of music he wanted for his funeral, and I'm just going to read the quote directly. And he said, "Most of the people who will walk after me will be children, so make the beat keep time with little steps." And there's something both so sad and sweet and thoughtful about that. And I think it's a great way to kind of exemplify, I think, what he felt his work meant to the world.
So in conclusion, right, when it comes to Hans Christian Andersen and children and writing, and the fact that ultimately he embraced his reputation, his well-deserved reputation as a master of fairy tales, I think we often make an argument for genre on our show. We talk about how it's not respected enough. And writing for children is so firmly in this, in that people don't respect how difficult it is to write for kids and to write for kids in a way where you know it will impact their childhood. But if you think about the ways in which so many of us still think or have imprinted upon us the stuff we read or were read as children, you understand the importance and the difficulty of being an adult writing for kids. And I think Hans Christian Andersen continues to be a standard to which so many children's authors try to reach, because so many of them were influenced by his work. And so, I just feel like sometimes we don't give this particular type of writing and this particular type of writer enough shine.
Let us know if you're a fan of fairy tales. Have you read Hans Christian Andersen? What are some of your favorites? We've been talking about him because it's our bibliography episode. Let us know. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Look at this stuff, isn't it neat? Wouldn't you think my collection's complete? Wouldn't you think I'm the girl who has everything? Look at this trove, treasures untold. How many wonders can one cavern hold? Looking around here, you think, sure, she's got everything. I've got gadgets and gizmos aplenty. I've got who's its and what's its galore. You want thingamabobs? I got 20. But who cares? No big deal. I want more.
And that brings us to footnotes. And usually for our bibliography episodes, we talk about adaptations of works by the author that we've dedicated the episode to. Of course, with Hans Christian Andersen, there is no shortage of adaptations. So many animated ones, well, because he wrote for children. So we'll maybe get the big one out of the way, which is, well, I suppose to be fair, there are two big ones, both not direct, or rather not straight adaptations. So there's The Little Mermaid, which is an adaptation of The Little Mermaid. And then there's Frozen, which is a loose adaptation of The Snow Queen. And both are, of course, courtesy of Disney. Very loose, very, very loose.
So I struggle with Frozen, because aside from the title, The Snow Queen, and the fact that Frozen is about somebody who falls in that category, It's so different.
I think because they started it off, I think, with a much more straight adaptation, and then they evolved along the way, and it's fine. I mean, it's fine that they didn't call it The Snow Queen. The Little Mermaid is probably a more egregious offender in terms of misrepresenting what Andersen's story was, even though I love the cartoon. You know, the original story and the animated version is nothing alike.
No, even The Mermaid, I think, is very, very different. Ariel and The Little Mermaid in the written form are just completely different beings with similar motivations, but I don't know, it's just entirely different. There's no Sebastian. It's
the witch is extremely different, because the witch in the original is not actually a villain. She's just a facilitator in many ways.
So I think that both Little Mermaid and Frozen mostly serve as a look at the Disneyfication of fairy tales. That's something that we covered in way more detail, if this is something you're keen on, in our previous show, The Fairest of Them All with Professor Maria Tata. You can look that up on our website and our app. But I think that the flattening, the addition of comedy, the addition of heartwarmingness is something that Disney does very, very well. I do think that if you love the movies, it would behoove you to go back and read the fairy tales, just because they're quick reads. You'll be done with them in like, what, half an hour? And you get, I think, a richer understanding of the stories, the characters, and why it is that they do what they do.
Yes, and I do think that they serve as a starting point to a much larger world of fairy tales. And I think often that's what a lot of these Disney animated versions do. If you do like Snow Queen, there's actually a really great animated adaptation from 1995. It has great voice cast: Helen Mirren, Hugh Laurie, Imelda Staunton. So that's one that I remember watching. I haven't watched it in a while. Again, it doesn't stick to the original fairy tale, but it's more Hans Christian Andersen than Frozen is.
Can I just quickly mention something that we should have mentioned in the main body of our show? And that is the term, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly, eventyr, which means adventure story or fairy tale. And I think that when we spoke about moralizing earlier and the lack thereof, we failed to mention the phrase. And the phrase is important because ultimately these stories, many of them, are not morals. They're not parables. They are just adventure stories. And while Snow Queen has a more heartwarming feel than most, actually, the body of it, really, it takes a long time to get to the happy ending. And it is so ripe for a good adaptation simply because it takes you, I don't know, across Finland and Lapland and you meet so many different things. And it's essentially a road trip story. And it does capture this idea of being an eventyr or an adventure story.
And I think that's key, isn't it? Because I don't think, and that would explain why moralizing is not necessarily the point of these stories. They are meant to be adventures for kids. So I think rather than talk about existing adaptations, even though there's so many, it maybe would be more fun to talk about what we'd like to see adapted from Anderson's works, because I think in this age of TV shows and high concept things that we can now see on screen, there's a lot more space to perhaps do justice to his works.
Yes, I have a very easy one, but I don't know if it is a feature-length film or a short film. I would like to see The Nightingale adapted.
Oh.
Because it's beautiful. It's literally beautiful. It's one of his more descriptive stories, right? And it tells the tale essentially of an emperor who used to be enchanted by the song of a nightingale until it was pointed out to him how plain she looks and how a mechanical version of her would do just fine. And then he falls ill and the story goes from there. And it really is about the push and pull between beauty and life and death and all these different things and the ways in which the nightingale herself and the mechanical nightingale is described, the arc that the story takes, and also the illustrations that I remember in the books from my childhood just mean that this is the one I would love to see. I don't know how it can be fattened up and richened, but I think it would be great.
I think Nightingale would be a great adaptation, and I think it would be the kind of thing that could work in any of the formats that you mentioned.
Also, it's about unrequited love. One of those.
Yes. I would love to see The Steadfast Tin Soldier, mostly because I feel like Toy Story is kind of halfway there with getting the how it would look. I'm down for animated or live action, but I'd love to see it because I think seeing something like that, you know, the perspectives you'd get, the way it would look on screen, but to contrast the visual trickery of that with the actual deep sadness of that tale, that could be something really quite special. Heartbreaking, but special to watch.
Thank God we are nobody to Pixar and they're invested in original stories at the moment because
I couldn't deal with this.
It would be insane.
I also want to see, because I just love Thumbelina, I feel like I really want to see a proper, reasoned, animated Thumbelina. Maybe by a Studio Ghibli. I think that would be amazing.
Oh, also tears and chills.
This has just become a wish list of things we want to watch at this point. But if you have things that you'd like to see adapted from Hans Christian Andersen or any fairy tales, really, what would you like to see on screen that you haven't yet seen? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, or write to us at buythebook@bfm.com.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.